Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is Elizabeth Hamilton flying solo today on the Best Ever You show with my lovely guest, Sue Jakes, the Civility CEO. I have no co-host, though. What do you think happened? Just kidding. she's got a family issue, so we're going to do this show by ourselves. Do you think we can handle it, Sue?
You bet we can. There's nothing that can stop we two.
I agree, definitely. So in Canada, they celebrate Thanksgiving at a different time of the year. It's not coming up for you like it is for us. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. In Canada, we've already had our turkey, and we are looking forward to Christmas. So on behalf of all Canadians, I'd like to wish all of our best neighbors on earth, our American friends, a very happy Thanksgiving. But yes, we celebrate Thanksgiving in October.
Yeah, I thought it was something more like that. And is it the same type of, I've only been to Canada once in my life, twice actually, and never there for Thanksgiving or anything like that. Is it the same kind of thing as the U.S. where it's turkey and stuffing and all that things, or do you have different traditions?
It's very much the same, Elizabeth. We always celebrate the harvest. You know, that's what it's all about, is celebrating the land. And so we have a big turkey dinner, lots of family. People travel from far and wide to come home and visit with one another. And it's a big feast.
Absolutely. Now, have you ever in your lifetime been at a feast where someone has totally flubbed the turkey?
That someone could have been me. I have been at a feast, and it was me who flubbed the turkey.
Uh-oh. And what did you do?
Well, I was really trying to be impressive. I was a young woman, but I was on my own, and it was my turn to host turkey dinner. I don't know if it was Thanksgiving or Christmas. I can't remember. But what I do remember is I didn't know that there was a little sack of stuff inside the turkey that you were supposed to take out. You know, the stuff,
yeah.
The giblets and the organs. And so I merrily cooked my turkey with all of that inside, and it was quite a delight at the end of the day when it was pointed out to me that that was meant to have come out.
Yeah, actually, in our community, on besteverCommunity.com, my mom took the liberty of writing in. My mom is like 65 years old, and she said she's, cooked like 300 and some turkeys in her lifetime or more or whatever, I don't know, some amazing amount. And she said her very first turkey that she ever cooked, she was having, she was newly married and had her in-laws over and all of this stuff, and she did the exact same thing, only there were two packets in it at that time. And, she put the turkey on the table, and it was to perfection. I mean, everything, manners, etiquette, civility, and turkey, all in one, fell swoop right there. And they started carving the turkey and getting the stuffing out, and all you heard was, oh, my, oh, my. And they hit it, though. They brought the turkey back in the kitchen and unstuffed everything and just sort of went on their merry way with no stuffing, I guess. But that's kind of a gross mistake, isn't it?
Well, but dealt with in such a very gracious way by the sounds of it, which is the trick about entertaining, isn't it? Is to know when to make a deal out of something and when to just very discreetly make it go away.
Yeah, like do 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 do. So, what do you recommend to everybody if you are attending a party, a Thanksgiving feast, a party, or whatever, and let's say on Thursday someone has burned the turkey or it's dry or what do you do? Do you be quiet? Well, do you say something?
If you're the guest, of course, you always want to show your thanks. Show your appreciation for the efforts that the person has gone to. If they make light of it themselves, it's okay to go along, but always try to point out the positive. Find out what you say was great about it, or about the effort that was put into it, or how lovely the table was. And if the turkey's too dry, maybe some extra cranberries will help. I don't know, a little bit of gravy. But we've all been there. And so allow the host or hostess to make the first joke, and once it opens up, if it feels right, sure, a gentle comment, but otherwise, gracious, gracious, gracious.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know that following Thanksgiving Day, the number one thing ordered in the United States is pizza?
Ooh. I did not that, know
right?
that.
How could you go? That is the number one thing to do, is order out for pizza the day following Thanksgiving, and I cannot for the life of me figure it out. How can you eat all that and the next day want to order pizza?
Oh, you're right.
Do
it's
they
like
do
going
that in Canada?
Going from, no, I don't know, not in my family, but it's like going from the frying pan into the fire, isn't it? Man,
oh,
talk about
yeah.
an overload.
Yeah, I don't get it at all. I don't know if it's the unwillingness to want to cook more or eat leftovers, but usually it goes Thanksgiving, pizza, then leftovers.
Huh. Well, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I don't know. What are you going to do? So you were talking about, in our community, you had this great article, and it was all about holiday parties and so forth. And I just thought that was so nicely written. Do you have, you know, let's talk, maybe we could spend some time talking about holiday parties, holiday cards, holiday parties, and so forth. But if you were invited, well, first of all, it sounds like a lot of people are cutting back on their holiday parties. But if you're going to a holiday party this year, what are some of the top things to remember about holiday parties? Should you, you know, drink and be merry and all that good stuff, or hold the alcohol, please, or I don't know.
You know, it's a great question, and thank you for your compliments. First of all, the piece that I wrote for Best Ever You is all about the sort of the office Christmas party, or not even necessarily just your office Christmas party, but lots of corporations have corporate parties at the holidays where they want to invite their clients or their colleagues to share in the joys of the season. And it's very common, I'd like people to understand that if you're one of the people who feels really uncomfortable entering a room full of strangers in a social corporate environment, you are not alone. Statistically, about 75% of people feel uncomfortable entering a social gathering, particularly work-related, and especially if they're alone. So there are some ways to get past that discomfort, and I've come up with 8 ways to turn networking fear into holiday cheer, especially at this time of year.
Yeah, I know I am one of those people for some reason. I get absolutely freaked out. Why?
Really? That's
yep,
surprising because you're so social.
Holiday parties are not my thing. I'm much more comfortable in my own house, having a few people over, but walk me into a room of people and especially at a business function or something like that, and I'll have anxiety for, you know, weeks leading up to it. Do I have the right dress on? Is my hair done? And is it about appearances or is it about behavior when you're nervous like that? What is
well,
it
I
that
think,
makes you wacky like that?
That's a great question, and I think the first thing to keep in mind that will probably ease a lot of our discomfort is to be prepared, and that takes effort. So we want to think ahead to be prepared for the event so that we don't have to worry so much about things like that. So, you know, the first thing that I recommend that we do is, first of all, when we receive the invitation, and we've talked about this before on your program, is to take a look at the invitation and reply promptly. A lot of people don't understand that RSVP means that the host or the meeting planner needs to know whether or not you're going to attend. So look at the wording of the invitation, because if it says RSVP, that means they'd like to know if you're going to come or if you're not going to come. As opposed to an invitation that says regrets only, that means they will presume you're coming unless you let them know otherwise.
Yeah, so if you're one of those people that gets the invitation, whether it's an email or regular snail mail, and you let it sit and sit and sit and sit, you might be perceived as being sort of rude in a way, correct?
You could well be, and they need to know, because quite literally your presence costs somebody money, bottom line.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Other consideration, you need to know, let them know if they're going to attend. Now, there's a couple of things that happen here, Elizabeth. First of all, if you can't go, say no. Let's just start right there. Don't pretend you can go. So many people, their yes is just a pre-no. Do you know what I mean? People say yes to everything, but really it's
boy,
just
I don't know that critter at all.
Yeah.
The yes is a way to work yourself up into getting there.
Sure. And yeah. So be very, very honest in your response. If you're going, if you say you're going to go, go. So be aware also that your host who is planning this event, especially if it's a large corporate event, they often have a couple of lists. One is the list of preferred clients that they'd like to have attend, but there's also oftentimes another list of people that they'd love to have attend if time and space and money allows. And so if you can't go and you diplomatically say no to the invitation, that opens up the opportunity for somebody else to attend what may be the event of their season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it goes true, you know, this rings true for whether you're attending at someone's home, a place, a birthday party, I mean, anything. If it says RSVP, your point is they're really looking for a yes or no.
Absolutely. And you know what that's like as a hostess, even if it's your own home and you're planning something for your kids. You just need to know. It's a simple, how many people are going to be here so you can be well prepared.
Yeah, and so where somebody might be perceiving it as anxiety, like yes or no, but really on the receiving end of the yes or no, the people are just doing it to plan, pay for, and understand how much food to make or how many chairs to put out or how much, you know, that kind of thing. It's more of a planning thing, not are you gracing us with your presence.
You've said that perfectly. Thank you.
Okay.
So then the next part of our preparation for these events is to know what to wear. You've just said that yourself, Elizabeth, that anxiety about what the heck are we supposed to wear? Is this a formal thing? Is it black tie? Or is it casual? So if you're the host of a soiree, make sure that you make it very clear on the invitation what people are going to be wearing, what you would like people to wear. And if it's not specified on the invitation and you are attending and you don't know what to wear, it is absolutely fine to call the host, the hostess, or the meeting planner, or even the venue, and ask them what the dress code is so that you're not wearing blue jeans and a T-shirt and everyone else is in tuxedos and taffeta.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever made that mistake before where you just show up in the wrong outfit?
Oh, yes. And, you know, I did the opposite. I wore the taffeta when everyone else was wearing the jeans. And
isn't that fun? I once, in the middle of San Francisco, at a opening for a .com type of thing. And, you know, I was kind of new to the area and so forth. And I guess that I kind of go with it, you know, you can't go wrong sometimes with like a black dress or something, what black pants and a shirt, you know, that kind of thing, generally speaking, but we'll talk about that in a second. But I showed up and I swear to God, I looked like an Easter egg. And then at night, I don't know what I was thinking. I think I had my little sister with me and she was just so darn cute. And she's 15 years younger than I am. And I think I was trying to more like dress like her. But I showed up, you know, it was a great dress, wrong time of the day, night, and event. And it made me cry while I was there and hide in the bathroom because I knew I was dressed wrong and there was no place to go. You know, you just wanted to trade dresses with somebody, pay somebody $100 for their dress or anything, and it ruined the whole night.
Well, Elizabeth, let me tell you something. I was invited to an event, and they said that the style of dress was retro.
What's that
so
mean?
I got all retroed up. I went like Peg Bundy, right? I had these crazy, crazy skin-tight pants on. I had my hair all bouffant and blue eyeshadow.
Oh, yeah.
I went
retro,
right? Went the full meal
retro.
Deal.
Retro.
Well, what they
retro
meant
mean?
Retro. They wanted like an Audrey Hepburn sort of sophisticated style and look. And let me tell you, I wanted to crawl backwards out of the room. But what I did instead was I took a deep breath and I held my head up high. And I actually, I pulled it off. Don't ask me how. I guess because I laughed at myself.
Yeah, I did too. I ended up saying, I looked at myself in the mirror in the bathroom with my little tears. I put my makeup back on. I said, you can do this, you know. And I said, I can't remember exactly, it was, you know, 15 years ago, but I said, oh, I just came from a different event.
Good one.
I didn't. And they were dressed like Easter bunnies there. So, I mean, I totally made a joke of it. And it was my way of saying, I know I have the wrong thing on. They knew it. But it was pretty funny. And then aside from that, I hid behind my husband most of the night.
Well,
but
good for you.
Down to the white shoes. Oh, man.
Yeah. You paint quite a picture, my friend.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful? So what is there? Some, is there a safe choice? If in doubt, do what? If you,
well,
if they can't get a hold of the host and they don't, they say the same thing, why or whatever. Is there a safe bet?
I think we can never go wrong if we choose a classic style, and something that I'd much rather recommend to everyone listening that if you're not sure what to wear, go a notch up rather than a notch down. So a lovely black dress, simple, sophisticated black dress with hose and heels is usually a safe bet. For gentlemen, even like black dress pants, a shirt and a jacket, you can always take the jacket off and look more casual, but you can't run back home and go get it. So wear sort of what you might be able to take off if you feel a little bit overdressed. That way you can kind of go either way depending on what's happening. But it's about having confidence in your style, in yourself, and knowing that you've put effort into it. So if you're not comfortable wearing a dress as a woman, a nice black dress pant and a blouse and jacket, or sweater and jacket, or a little sweater, it can be just fine. It's what's going on in the confidence level inside of you that matters, and that will always, always shine.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, at the end of the night, your feet are so sore from your heels. Is it acceptable to walk around in your stockings with your shoes off? Did your feet hurt? Or tennis shoes,
you know what,
with the old pennies on.
I think you need to find some shoes that are comfortable, because your outfit, you want to look as put together when you're leaving the event or when the event is winding down as you did when you walked in the door. So invest in some shoes that are really comfortable. But what I have seen lately is a really great idea. I saw them at the local drugstore, and I've also seen them starting to show up at some shoe stores. And they're a little ballet flat that are portable. And they come in a little tiny sack to fit in your purse. And they're gorgeous. They're embellished. They're pretty. And they look dressy. And they're specifically meant for, you know, when we're wearing our kicking hot shoes, and at the end of the night we can't stand it, that's exactly what they've been made for, so that you can slip off your shoes and put this pretty little ballet flat on and still look like you are dressed.
Exactly, and then people around the office go, well, you really are 4'8".
And the other thing, just FYI, ladies, this is something I always do when I'm going to an event and I'm wearing hose. I always, 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 always have an extra pair with me, because they're, especially if they're dark in color. Because
I do that.
I have the most gorgeous dress on, and you get one of those ladder runs up the back of your leg. It's awful. So I always actually, if we're not driving ourselves, I take them out of the package, and they fit very nicely in the breast pocket of my husband's jacket, on the inside pocket, and carries them around all night. And in case I need them, they're there.
Yeah, my husband is always loaded up. In his suit jacket is always loaded up with epinephrine, because I'm allergic to everything, an extra pair of nylons. I mean, his pockets are filled with stuff. It's the most hysterical thing. And I've got my little bag, and I'm all in my dress or whatever, and he's just got all these really strange items in his blazer, from lipstick to nylons. Now he's going to have ballet flats this year. That'll be fun.
And for corporate events, Elizabeth, very often these events are held after, just immediately after work, right? So they have a cocktail and hors d'oeuvre party after work. And you can even take your work suit as a woman or a man, particularly as a woman, and dress it up a little bit for after 5 by bringing maybe a pretty sparkly cardigan and switching your blazer for a cardigan. It can be really, really simple to switch from sort of corporate to corporate social, with even adding a scarf, changing a sweater, just little tiny touches to shake it up a little bit, even changing your shoes.
Yeah, great. All right, the next item you have here is about eating.
You know, who knew that you should eat before you go to an event that's serving food?
That sounds like a date, like you eat before you go out on the date.
You're right. You know what happens, especially at these corporate events that are right after the office closes, is we get there and we're starving. And yes. And we walk in the room and there's this amazing aromas of fantastic food. And what you want to do is remember that you are a professional and you're there to meet and greet people. And you also want to remember that there's very likely going to be alcohol served. We'll talk about that in a moment. Yes. But the holidays, we are surrounded by all these amazing foods and the temptation is unbelievable. Now, if we want that, little black dress to fit by January, we need to be careful about what we're eating. So yeah. I do recommend that you eat before you go something like a half a banana even, or some crackers with some protein can help stave off that feeling that when you walk in the room, you just want to make a beeline to the treat table and start stuffing your face. The reason I say that is because you're there because of the opportunity, and you never know who you might meet. And my preference is always to be prepared to meet somebody without a mouthful of food so that I can greet them and speak with them, as opposed to that embarrassing moment when the person you've been waiting to meet comes approaching you and you got crumbs all over your face or a mouthful of food. So, yes, it's okay to have a bite to eat while you're there, but really, these events, corporate events, are about meeting, greeting, socializing, and getting to know others more than they are about getting every last morsel of food.
Yeah, so if you're the one who has got the invitation, you've said you're going, you've got what you're going to wear, and your hidden agenda is free food,
you're going to the wrong party. But you know what happens all the time?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does. I'm picturing so many parties that I've been to where the guy just stands right. It's not usually the girl, but it's the guys. They stand right. There's sometimes guys who stand right by the food the whole night.
Well, the other thing is, you know how food has become art? You know, there's these amazing food on sticks, and it's all presented so beautifully, but it can be really, really challenging to eat. And so you're standing there, and the trays are coming around, the servers are serving this beautiful, artistic food, and then you're standing there at that moment thinking, what the heck am I going to do with this? How do I eat this?
Yeah.
So be very cautious what you accept. And it may sound silly, but it's very true. It can save you an awkward moment if you're prepared by having a bite ahead, not worrying about the food, and moving on to meet and greet people.
Now, sometimes corporations have actual holiday dinners. Now, that would be an exception, correct? If you've been invited ahead and you're choosing, the chicken or the filet or something like that, and you're expected to sit down and have dinner, are there any rules there? Like, don't order a lot of excessive alcohol or, are there any rules for sitting down to something like that?
Absolutely, and it's a great point that you've brought forward, because it is quite common in a more intimate environment for a company to host a formal meal. So the biggest hint that I could give to people in that circumstance is to always watch your host for hints. So when your host begins the meal, you'll know that because the host is the one who takes their napkin off the table first. So you're always following the lead of the host. When the host begins to dine, you begin to dine. When the host is finished, you're finished. So you want to pace yourself and not be like gobbling everything up and everyone, you're on your dessert and everyone else is still on salad.
Oh, good point, especially if you're the host, right?
Exactly. And I really believe that it is important as an executive to know how to dine with confidence, and that is an investment. Dining tutorials are worth every single penny that you will pay to learn how to dine so that you never again have to worry about which fork to use, where does your napkin go, which bread plate is yours. You never have to worry about it again.
Yeah, that we'll do another show on that, definitely. Excuse me, about dining. That's a whole show on its own, and maybe some videos or something. Great idea there. Now, breaking away for 1 second from eating, and what if your company has, for example, given you a free turkey for the holidays, and that's your holiday party? Or if they've said, we're not doing anything this year, but instead we're going to make a donation in your honor to such and such a charity. Are there still rules of etiquette or civility that apply to that circumstance as well? Should you send out a thank you note? What do you do if your company opts for that instead?
Yes, I think we're going to see more and more of that because we are being a lot more fiscally responsible, and we're trying to do things a little bit different as a society right now, and show our appreciation in different ways. So, mm-hmm. if you are the recipient of a charitable, like somebody making a charitable donation in your name, or companies, I've gotten emails already this year from companies that are saying, we're not sending out Christmas cards this year to save money on the environment. We've made a donation in that amount to wherever.
Yeah.
It's still a gift, and any gift, I believe, whether it's the gift of a meal, the gift of a turkey, the gift of a donation in your name, is absolutely worthy of a handwritten thank you note. Handwritten will always stand out, and if you want to stand out, send handwritten notes through snail mail, and you will be remembered, but it's not about you. It's about how you say thank you.
Okay, good. And do you, just breaking again for one more thing, just off on a little tangent, is it perceived as rude or impersonal to go ahead and make donations in people's honor or not send out Christmas cards and so forth? Is our society getting a little impersonal there, where maybe it is a better choice to send out that Christmas card handwritten and so forth? I've got a bunch of Christmas card questions that eventually, or holiday cards rather, that I want to kind of ask you. Should I save those for later on in the conversation, or should we talk about them now?
Well, we can talk about that now. I think again, there's a trend. I've heard people say that they're sorry to see that they're not getting as many holiday cards in the mail. You know, old-fashioned cards with a note in them. I really do believe, Elizabeth, that that's a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think our generation, I think it's also a generational thing where people in sort of boomers are more likely to appreciate a handwritten card when they receive it in the mail. I think anybody appreciates a handwritten card. But
right.
some people are thinking as much about you know, being really smart about how they're spending their money and about how we're utilizing the things that the environment provides us. So perhaps you may want to think about purchasing cards that are printed on recycled material,
mm-hmm.
as a show of support for the environment. If you're not going to be sending a card and you do want to stay in touch with people, maybe pick up the phone, make a phone call.
That's a novel idea.
Let people know you're thinking of them. You
yeah.
know, I've heard that there are some websites now, and I'm sorry I don't know what they are off the top of my head, but that you can create some amazingly lovely electronic cards. I think the
yeah.
point, Elizabeth, is to let our hearts touch each other, and whatever that says for you as an individual, for your listeners as individuals, is what's right for them. It's about staying in touch, letting people know we're thinking of them, and how it's become a much more personal choice.
Good. Well, yeah, very well put. I love that. As long as you think with your heart, that's one of my sayings. I always say that, think with your heart. So, all right. Well, okay, so let's go back to holiday parties for a moment. And you talked when we started about entering the room confidently. And that is very hard for some people. And it can be like you maybe feel like you walk in too early, too late, too many people in the room. There's a whole list of anxiety things that go through. I know in my head, especially what to talk about. That's a big one for me. So what is it about entering the room confidently and then staying in the room with confidence?
Well, first of all, I encourage everybody to remember that if you are at an event, it's because most often you've been invited. They want you there. They didn't just throw out invitations willy-nilly. They selected you and your guest, if that's the case, because they want you there. They feel that you will add value. And so remember when you're even driving to or walking to the event, walking down the hallway to open the door, to walk in the room, that you belong. They want you there because they appreciate your presence. So it is very challenging to walk in the room, and here's what I recommend that you do. take a big deep breath, like go to the cloakroom, put your coat away. They'll probably have some kind of name tag. I always wear my own name tag. I have a magnet back name tag that I wear when I go so that people can remember who I am. It certainly beats the ones that hang around your navel, you know, on a string.
The ones that always are falling off because they're sick or whatever.
I wear my own tag because I don't want to walk out with my tag on my shoe. And take a deep breath, pause at the doorway, have a look around, get your bearings, figure out where you are, where people are, where the tables are, where it is you want to go. Put a big smile on your face. I want you to smile with your eyes and walk in the room. If you are with a group from work, I recommend that you agree to divide and conquer, because otherwise you end up sticking together like Velcro all night long and you don't meet anybody new. The point of these events is to get out there and meet some people. So before you even go, I'm hoping that people will take 5 or 10 minutes to do a little bit of homework so that you can be well prepared for conversation, because as you mentioned, Elizabeth, that's the hard part. So know about your host. Check out their website. Find out a little bit about what they're up to. Follow their Twitter lead. Find out what they've been doing. Mm-hmm. Know if there's a guest speaker. Find out about the guest speaker so that if you run into them, you can talk with them about them. If there's a charity involved, find out about the charity so that when you walk into the room and you approach somebody, you have something to talk about other than the weather or the food.
Or yourself,
that's right, because you want to talk about people.
Yeah, and have you ever been at a thing where just somebody just talks about everything that they're doing, just to the point where you just want to escape and leave the party? How do you teach people to not talk about themselves the whole time, but rather extract information from others? That's a
three
skill.
Three magic words. Those three magic words are, tell me about. So remember, when you are speaking with somebody, it's not a monologue, right? It's a dialogue. so
monologue.
We want to remember that our job when we walk into these places is to find out about other people. Yes, they'll naturally want to know something about us, so have something interesting to share. Not the normal, you know, what do you do? Yeah, that's important. But tell them more about who you are than what you do. Remember those words, tell me about. So when somebody mentions something to you, let's say they say they're going to Colorado for the holidays, you can say, oh, tell me more about that. So you're inviting conversation as opposed to saying, oh, that sounds nice.
I always meet people like that, you know, very interesting. I'm guilty of it too, where you get so nervous that you just sit there and chatter about yourself rather than remember, wait a minute, tell me about. That's really, really good advice. And then what about the person that's obsessively passing out their business cards at a holiday party? Is that acceptable or not acceptable?
Well, let's not be that person. So remember, this is a corporate event, not a contest. So let's not be the person. I had somebody once tell me that they loved going to they went to an event where there was a buffet line, you know, and you lined up to get your food to take back to the table. And they told me they were so excited because what they did was start at the beginning of the line and go to the back and handed out their business cards to all the people standing in line. Note to self. That's not how we want to present ourselves. So no. The thing about business cards is you need to have a little bit of a relationship with the person. And by relationship, I mean a bit of a conversation to make sure that you have a mutual interest and that there's a reason to share your business information. So if you feel that there's something that you can offer to that person or that you would like from them, that's the time to say, may I have your business card, please? And usually, or shall we exchange information? And usually that's an invitation to exchange business cards.
So if you're the person saying, hi, my name's Elizabeth, what's your name? And here, let me give you my business card. That's obnoxious, correct?
There needs to be a purpose. And so far there's no purpose from that type of conversation.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right. There are all sorts of people in the room. Some are more enthusiastic than others. there's a whole range of people in a room usually. Some are shy, some are overly enthusiastic, and there's all sorts of people in the middle. What's the goal? What should your mood be like when you're going to these events?
Well, remember that you're invited. So there's part of this is to be a gracious guest. It's an honor to be invited to an event, whether it's at somebody's home, whether it's at a large, you know, hotel ballroom. It's still an honor to be invited. And you owe it to your host and the other guests to add some value. So do bring your enthusiasm. You will notice when you walk into the room, when you're pausing at the door before you enter, you'll notice that there's usually, you've just sort of painted this picture, there are usually three groups of people. There are the people around the perimeter who are really, really usually feeling a little bit uncertain. They don't feel confident enough to approach strangers. There's the people in the middle who are kind of usually in pairs or partners, and they're doing okay. They're wandering around with their other person that they know, but they're not really meeting new people. And then there's the people who look like they were born to schmooze, and they can have a conversation with anybody. What I'd like every listener on the call to become is the person who feels comfortable enough to walk up to somebody whom you don't know or you haven't seen for a while, put your biggest, brightest smile on, introduce yourself or reintroduce yourself, and start a conversation. And my biggest piece of advice, especially at this time of year, is to rescue a wall person.
So I was going to ask you that. Do you go in? Because I'm the type who always wants... I can go in and I can be over-enthusiastic, but what I usually do is kind of mellow out and rescue somebody on the perimeter.
Exactly.
And bring them in. Because you know they're just... I start off really scared, and then once I get there, I'm fine. And then I go and I go on my best ever you mission of always kind of helping others like I do. And
exactly.
And I bring people in once I kind of get going. But, the generally, you're right, though. The people kind of hanging out on the edge. There are always people hanging out on the edge. And what's up with that? Are they terrified to be there? But they've got it... They've got to have taken a couple steps, though, to get there that make them have some level of confidence.
And perhaps for them, that's where they are right then and there. They've made it that far, and they may not know what to do from that point. So let's look at this as the season of giving. And as the season of giving, what we can give to those people is our time and our attention and our kindness by approaching them, inviting them to maybe walk over to the, you know, to introduce them to somebody else, to help them make this a really great event. Even the conversation, what I've found at most events is even if you have one great conversation at an event, you will remember that event. So,
like meeting you. Meeting you at the Matrix Awards, the neatest thing. You know, and trust me, Katie and I were terrified to go to that event, and we didn't know who we were going to meet or what we were going to do, and there you were. So.
And we, you know, and it worked out just beautifully because we took time. It was a moment that we shared. So sharing that moment is what will help people remember the event. And even if they walk away with one great conversation, that will help people gain confidence for the next event. And sometimes, Elizabeth, when we're preparing to go to these events, what we need to do is even just put a little timeline around it and say, okay, here's what I'm going to do differently this time. I'm going to go in with an enthusiastic attitude, well prepared to have conversations. I'll have my little bite before I go. I'll be dressed properly. And I'm going to make sure that my goal is to meet one new person or have two great conversations. And if that's your goal, you've reached it, then you can be proud of yourself and leave with your head held high knowing that you accomplished your goal and you added value.
All right. I'm going to skip ahead to one thing. And what about the person who wants to be the life of the party, the drinker, the downing of the whole entire bottle of booze? You know, that. What's up with that? And what do we do about that? And if you see it happen, what do you do? And do you take the keys and help?
This is a fantastic question, and I'm so glad you brought it forward. So, first of all, as we've pointed out throughout the entire call, let's not be that person.
Oh, yeah.
So So we can, first of all, be responsible for ourselves. You know, this is not about the free booze. This is about the conversation and the opportunities that the conversations may lead to. So set your own limits. There are liabilities involved with different states, different companies. Different companies even have their own protocols and sort of expectations around alcohol at social events, so find that out. But before you even need to go there, look into your own heart and decide what your own personal policy is about drinking at social events. This is not a judgment call, and it's not up to me to tell people what to do. But I do think that sometimes nerves do get in the way, and you know, we have a drink. And there's also these events where there's an endless glass of wine that's always constantly being topped up. So really, really be aware. Remember, you are, if it's a corporate event, you are still at work, and you have a job to do. And it's like a meeting. It's like attending these things is like attending meetings, only they have a social component rather than in a boardroom, they're in a fancy ballroom. So if you see somebody overindulging and you are not the host, personally, I recommend that you bring it to the attention of the host so that they can be responsible for making sure that that person is safe and that other people are safe who are in their presence.
Yeah, I think definitely safety is a really big concern. So someone isn't drinking and driving or doing something like that. But also, you know, you mentioned when you're at an event and you're drinking, it is really still like being at work. For example, if you're at a work party, do you think you can make or break a career, perhaps by, you know, let's say you downed 12 glasses of wine and are passed out in the middle of the party. Do you think you could ruin your career by doing something like that?
I absolutely do, Elizabeth, and especially these days when everything can go viral in a heartbeat. People have phones on every device they carry in their purses and pockets, and you can be captured in that moment, and that can be shared with the world before you wake up. So I advise huge caution. Again, remember, you are a professional. And even if your company, this is something that we sometimes forget, if the company is hosting the event and you work for the company, you are one of the hosts.
Yeah. Absolutely. And a lot of interesting things happen with drinking, too. You may behave in a way that you don't really remember. you may do things you didn't intend on doing, and there's a whole lot of things that go with drinking. So do you sort of recommend to almost treat it like food? Don't drink
treat
before
it like
you go, I guess. But hang on, I need to say that again.
A little something to take the edge off. No. I think responsible professionals know their limits. Personally, for me at a corporate event, I choose to have an alcohol-free drink. When we are hosting something, we offer alcohol-free alternatives, even wines and sparkling wines, because you know sometimes it's about having that lovely glass in your hand, and it feels really nice, and you love drinking out of a lovely wine glass or champagne flute. But it doesn't have to have wine or champagne in it. There are all kinds of reasonable options that can add ambiance to the afternoon or evening event.
I was so hoping you were going to say that, because that's one of my tricks. My big thing is just having the glass in hand, but mine's usually filled with Sierra Mist.
Mm-hmm.
Or Sprite or water. Never. I'm not a big drinker, so I can have fun without it. So, all right. So, going back to one of the points you made before about say something, tell me about, and things like that. I think we talked about this a little bit, but what are things maybe not to say, or other things to talk about? Should you talk about work, for example, if you're at a work party?
Well, I think if you're meeting somebody for the first time and you want to establish who does what, that's one way to begin the conversation. But another one of the phrases I love to use when I'm socializing at corporate events is when I learn about what somebody does for a living, I'll very often say to them, and when you're not doing that, what do you love to do?
Oh, that's neat.
Because that helps me understand more about who that person is as opposed to what they do. I love meeting new people and finding out about them. And that's where it gets interesting, is when you find out what they love to do when they're not working. And I have had the most fascinating conversations with people who you would have no idea that they, you know, build guitars or love to cook or, you know, are exploring the seven wonders of the world, that if we were just talking about the fact that they're an accountant, it never would have come out. So there's really a skill in asking questions. And once you find out what somebody loves to do, I call that hitting their passion point. And when you find somebody's passion point, the conversation is like leading them down a garden path, because you found what they, not only what they love to do, but usually when you find what somebody loves to do, you find what they love to talk about. And when you find what they love to talk about, you just keep asking questions about it, and it becomes fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that there, I notice when you talk, you specifically, when you talk, you, I don't know if this is your personality or what, but it, every time I talk to you, you always have a really genuine interest in what other people do. Always. And it's not fake. It's you. Do you think when you're talking to somebody and you really don't care, should you just cut that conversation off there? Or what do you do? There isn't, in other words, what I'm trying to say is there's not really a great way that I've ever found anybody achieve to fake sincerity in listening to another human being. So when you say, tell me about, do you mean really you're asking that question and you want to hear the answer, or you're just trying to get their business card out of them? Okay. Do you know what I mean? Do you know that difference in that conversation?
I do.
How do you?
I do.
Save me here.
First of all, thank you for your compliment, and I really do genuinely care.
You do, yeah, I know.
I just do. However, sometimes in a conversation, we don't. We just don't. It's time to move on. And so, you know, the tell me about, the when you're not working, what do you love to do? Those are questions if you really are engaged in a conversation. But really, sometimes the conversation and you just aren't getting along, and there's somebody else you would like to meet, or it's time to go, or whatever. So what do we do in that circumstance is wait for a natural break in the conversation, and usually the conversation is really a monologue at that point. Wait for a natural break in the discussion or in the sentence that they're saying. Smile, extend your hand, and say, Elizabeth, this has been a wonderful meeting you, and I've really enjoyed hearing about your, you know, most recent trip to Colorado, and I wish you a very happy holiday season. Excuse me, please. And you walk away.
Yeah. So if you're really in an uncomfortable conversation, that's how you get out of it. You don't have to sit there all night long really listening to the monologue.
No. Again, we're back to grace, and grace is the gracious trick in, or the gracious part of what I said is that you acknowledged what they said. So you're not just saying, oh, "Excuse me, there's somebody over there I'd like to go speak with." You're saying, "That's been it's been really interesting." If it wasn't great, don't say it was great to hear about. If we're talking sincerity. You want to be able to say, "That was really interesting to hear about your trip to Colorado or your most recent third quarter results. I hope you enjoy the rest of the afternoon. Excuse me."
Yeah.
And if you can mention their name in the conversation, this is what people love to know, is that you heard them. You heard them and you remember their name.
Yep. I absolutely agree with you. What about all of the thank yous? Do you thank people before you go? I mean, before you leave, should you be shaking hands? How do you say thank you for inviting me over? Thank you for a great party. How is that these days? How do you say thank you?
In a big, huge room, let's go back to the ballroom where there's 200 people milling around enjoying the afternoon or evening event. If there's only one person you speak with through the whole thing, please make sure it's your host. the person who invited you. And it may not always be possible to reach them because they're usually inundated with guests coming up and saying hello and thanking them. But please make sure that you are always keeping your eye on them so that when the opportunity presents itself, you can approach them and shake their hand and thank them for inviting you. Now remember, they have probably invited all of these people. They may not remember who you are. So let them know who you are and say, you know, hello, Mr. or Ms. so-and-so. You know, I'm Sue Jakes, and I'd like to thank you very much for inviting me. I've had a lovely time meeting your colleagues and learning more about what you do, and this was lovely. Then you're going to say thank you again, because when you get back to your home or office, I highly recommend that the very next day you handwrite a note and pop it in the mail so that they receive it at their office or home very promptly. And this applies to people, if you go to people's home for dinner, if you go to an event, if you get the turkey, whatever it is important to say thank you. And it's never too late. If you forget, it's okay. And a relationship, in my opinion, never gets too old to say thank you. My best friend, my BFF and I have been best friends for over 30 years. And we get together for lunch on our birthdays and at Christmas, as well as other times of the year. And I have never not received or sent a thank you note every single time. And it fills my heart with joy, even after all these years. The personal notes that she sends me just want to bring me to tears because they're so thoughtful.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. There are some amazing handwritten note writers, aren't there?
Yes, there are.
They still exist. Is a handwritten note the same as an email note or a text message?
I believe no. Here's the difference. A handwritten note, you and I are more likely to put on our credenza or put on the, you know, on the countertop for a few days or put on the fridge. You know, it's something we look at. We keep it for a few days. We like it. It's tangible. And I think we're very unlikely to print an email and put it on our desk, a thank you email.
Oh, yeah.
It's about the sentiment, though. I mean, in all fairness, some people prefer the speed at which you can say thank you electronically.
Mm-hmm.
It does make some personality, but it's the words that matter. In all fairness, it's the thought that matters. It's the fact that you chose special words for that person to say thanks, to show your gratitude. But I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of people about thank you notes, and very few people have ever said to me that they don't appreciate getting them. Now, people will say they don't like getting, like, vague ones that are insincere, that it sounds like, you know, you just kind of said the same thing to everybody.
Right.
Well, it's about personalizing it and making it very, very real.
Okay. I'll get better at my handwritten thank you notes now. Yeah, well, it's interesting. Go ahead. What did you say?
I was going to say there's a word that I've coined that I think can really, really come in handy right about now, and that's taking the word sincere and combining it with the word serious, and we all need to become a little bit more sincerious. Have to take sincerity more seriously.
Yeah.
So we need to become a little bit more sincere this time of year.
Good. Yeah, I think that's great. I'm going to go back to food for a little bit, because I'm switching topics abruptly because we only have 5 minutes left. Can you believe that?
It went quickly. I thought you were going back to food because you were getting hungry.
No, I am hungry, but we only have 5 minutes left. I'm just shocked. But I do want to go back to food because this really is a big panic point for people, especially when they're sitting down to dinner and you're sitting, let's say you want that promotion so badly and you need to sit next to the CEO of the company for dinner. And this is your first big dinner and there are 8 forks on the table. What in the world do you do with all of the silverware, your napkin? Oh, Can you touch that topic in just a little bit? And how do you know you don't have food in your teeth and everything?
And it is so anxiety provoking. Not when
you're faced.
You know, we all think, oh, I know how to eat. Well, there's a huge difference between eating and dining. So number one, you know, if you forget all else, napkin goes on your lap. Keep it folded in half with the fold towards your tummy.
Oh, so okay. Don't unfold the whole thing and tuck it in your top of your shirt.
Don't tuck it in your bib. And tuck it in on your lap, fold it in half.
All right.
When it comes to silverware, no matter how much silverware is on the place setting, you start at the outside and you work your way in. So that's one way to remember. When you don't know which bread plate is yours, which glassware is yours, you're all confused and you don't know what to do next, remember BMW. B on the left is your bread plate. M in the middle is your meal. And W on the right is anything wet, like wine or water.
Oh.
So BMW, you're looking at your place setting, you know, B on the left, that's your bread plate. M, of course, is your main course, your meal. And W on the right is where your wine or water goes.
Now, if somebody reaches to the left and takes a sip out of your water, not knowing BMW, do you reach over to their right and grab their water?
I would personally ask for another glass from the server, if that was at all possible. But
yeah.
You know what? If everybody's going the opposite direction, including your host, you know, you're not there to be the teacher. You're there to enjoy.
Right.
So it's about
so don't be the one that stands up and says, excuse me, bread on the left, meal in the middle, and water on the right. Folks, let's go.
Please don't be that person. And if you're tempted to be that person, phone me.
Okay. Text you under the table, or is that rude? Where do those phones go?
You don't bring your phone. Leave it. I mean, if you have to, if you're on call for whatever reason, but please, at a formal meal, any meal at all, unless you are absolutely urgently required, turn it off, leave it at home, put it in the car, leave it in your coat pocket. The dining table is not the place for your communication devices, in my opinion. And I have had people call me, 911 phoning me, whispering from restaurants. Clients of mine have said, I don't know what to do. You got to help me.
First of all, put your phone away, right?
It's the first thing I said.
Do you believe bad dining can make or break a job promotion or interview situation, that type of thing? Like if you, eat your steak with your hands and you're supposed to use a fork, are you in trouble?
I think it can certainly affect your credibility and the future of your, especially in a job interview. Lots of people don't realize that going out for a meal is very often these days part of a job interview. They think sometimes that they've made it and now they're going to be taken out for lunch to celebrate, when in fact, very often as part of the interview, they are being taken out for a meal to see how they deal with food. I was hired once to deal with a young man who ate a prime rib meal with his hands at a corporate event. And so these things happen. It happens. And my job as the civility CEO is to help people gain confidence in these circumstances so that they can earn the respect that comes with being a professional. And if a fork is going to mess up your career, it's time to learn about forks or conversations or what to wear or how to behave.
Yeah, that's the total beauty of you and why we're on the phone with you, because you definitely know. I have, we only have a minute left. I used to work at this company in Minneapolis, and somebody used to always slurp their soup.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're out for big executive lunches, and they would also smack their lips while you're eating, and you're trying to, you know, have somebody sign on the dotted line, and your colleague is smacking their lips real quick. Is it acceptable to say, hey, Sally, stop smacking your lips, as the other colleague?
I would never do it in front of other people.
But if politely, can you do it?
Like that. Any conversation like that requires discretion, and I would encourage people to look at the reason they want to bring it forward. Is it just that it bugs you, or that you want to help the person improve?
Okay.
For their own sake, not yours.
Yeah. Or give them your card. All right. Well, thank you for being with us, and I appreciate it. And I guess I can't wish you a happy holiday. I guess I have to wish all of our listeners out there a happy holiday if Thanksgiving is what you're celebrating. But we appreciate you being with us here today, and we'll chat with you again soon. I loved listening to you today. I genuinely appreciate all the information.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Enjoy the season.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.